C6, number 4B.
We have done the word vertical in the matrix, and we have seen that from the absolute standpoint, we are seeing how God reveals himself always as his own nature. But then, naturally, we have to see how are we taking part in this revelation. Because God reveals himself through eternity. But what we are naturally interested in it is that we take part in this revelation. So that the four chapters give us actually a step-by-step approach of how to let revelation come in, how the true nature of being comes in into our understanding, and how we can know what is reality and what is unreality. Now we come to the second four chapters on the Christ, and we have seen that the Christ is showing here from the absolute standpoint the translation from God to the point of idea. Now, the moment we speak about translation, I think we should be clear that Mrs. Eddy uses the term translation in various ways. I would say at least in three different ways. One way is the one we have here, the absolute sense of translation, that God always translates itself to the point of ideas. Then Mrs. Eddy speaks in a secondary way, about the wrong translation, namely that we would like to translate ideas into material things. Therefore, this is a wrong translation. It translates ideas into things, or good into evil. And third, she speaks about translating matter back to mind, capital M. Therefore, correcting really the wrong translation by retranslating error back into truth. Now we have to keep this clear in our mind, that when we speak about translation, we have to show which kind of translation is involved, and only in this way can we really understand the teaching of Christian Science. Translation is a great subject in Christian Science because of what? Because Christian Science deals with how to solve erroneous problems. And in the world and in the various ways of metaphysics, there are always various methods of how to solve erroneous problems. One kind of metaphysics teaches that because evil is nothing, we just can disregard the problem. It's the most simple way of answering it, and the most stupid way of answering it. It just says, because God is all and God is good, therefore evil is nothing, therefore any problem that says it is evil is just nothing, so you better don't be concerned with it. You disregard it. Another method of handling the question of a negative problem is to try to fight it and to destroy it. And this has naturally its ultimate form, actually in suicide, and I guess very often one hears that from people, from students, in a desperate way, that they say, if matter is anyway not real, So let's get rid of it as soon as possible and as quickly as possible and as radical as possible. We can't lose anything by just killing oneself off and get rid of all the pain and suffering and the trouble and everything, as reality is anyway real and spiritual. Therefore, I cannot lose anything by getting rid of matter. This again is tackling the question from the wrong end, because what we have to get rid of is not matter, but a false concept. So we can't get rid of a false concept by destroying matter. Another method of dealing with the problem of evil is by arguing against it. Denial and affirmation. The method that Mrs. Eddy taught at the beginning, the method that is still used very often in the Christian Science practice, it's affirming the truth and denying error. But we know that this kind of argumentation is only an auxiliary really for spiritual healing, that it isn't science at all, and Mrs. Eddy never calls it really science, but only an auxiliary. And Mrs. Eddy even warns us of this method, because if we do that too much and too often and all along our lives, what do we get? We feel that evil is really something. If we constantly have to deny it, we really feel that it is quite a big power. And so mentally, actually, we make more of evil than less of evil by constantly denying evil and affirming truth. Another method of dealing with the same situation is the metaphysical way, the ordinary metaphysical way, which is used very often in Christian Science practice and which is not science at all, is to exchange the objects of sense for the ideas of soul and start that way. It means starting out from the problem and trying to solve the problem from error, which is not neither scientific either. Therefore, what Mrs. Eddy really asks us to do is what we were considering as system thinking, namely not to consider the problem as such, or as John Dolly would say, put it behind you into a corner and turn around into the infinitude of mind, which means the problem is not the problem. Really, the only problem we have is to enlarge and expand our system of reference, again, to go upward, so to say, as we said, to a bigger whole, and reason things out from that bigger whole. Now, if we do that, then we use translation, and therefore what Mrs. Eddy calls the scientific translation of immortal mind is therefore the scientific method of dealing with any problem. It is therefore that attitude which says, leave the problem as what it seems to be, enlarge your concept of wholeness to a wider system of reference than the problem. What is the higher, the more whole, we can say that, system? That are the synonymous terms. So go out from the synonymous terms and let the synonymous term tell you about the ideas of reality. And then from there you can come down really again from the divine mind, translating itself as ideas, and then through the law of opposites, uncover the error that has to be destroyed. Then, only then, at that point, we can use the metaphysical method of exchanging the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. Only then, but not as a starting point. And this has not always been seen, or very seldom seen. You know very well that in Christian Science practice, and in talking to each other, and in discussing things with each other, that whenever a problem arises, we are apt to use that method of translating the objects of sense, the problem, back into an idea, which is not a scientific method. The scientific method is not to start out from a problem. Science always goes out from the principle of being, from truth, and never from error. Therefore, this scientific translation of immortal mind is the method of dealing with any problem. And here, in the Christian Science textbook, we have those four big chapters, the four chapters, all dealing with this sense of translation and showing the true and right and also the wrong sense of translation, also the sense of retranslation. All three kinds of translation are involved in these chapters. Now, how are they shown here? And so we come to the fifth chapter, which is the chapter on animal magnetism unmasked. And we see here what? We see here, if we take the point of intersection, that the translation from God to the point of idea is that proposition which we should accept. Can you see the horizontal and the vertical? It is showing clearly that that translation from God to idea is really that proposition that should be accepted. You have here in the word on the horizontal, accepting the proposition. And the proposition is that you only accept one translation, namely the translation from God to idea. Can you see how easy science becomes? Think of all the years and years and years that students in Christian Science are discussing how to deal with a problem. How they are discussing how to argue, how to affirm the truth, how to affirm the truth and, what is the other one? I don't even know it. Negate, deny, error. It's something that is so foreign to my consciousness that I even forget it. That all this is under discussion of exchanging objects of sense for ideas, whereas the simplicity of science tells us here, if we think creatively, that there is only one way of dealing with animal magnetism, and that is only to accept the translation from God to idea. It's as simple as that. That is the great proposition, which means, naturally, that through accepting that translation, naturally we do not accept the wrong translations. The wrong translations, which is animal magnetism, which says that ideas can be put into good and evil forces, into good and evil mental forces, into good and evil situations. That there is another translation going on than the one from God to man, namely that there is a translation or influence going on from the world to us, from other people to us, from the stars to us, from the present age to us, that we are under the influence of a false translation, that everything else also except God can translate itself to us and influence, so to say, our very life experience. Now, if we see the true point of intersection, this naturally frees us from all this evil influence. And that is here the case that the chapter on animal magnetism wants to show that there is no other influence, no other translation that is going on except mind bringing to us the maximum of good. Mind translating itself as all ideas of mind, and these ideas are good, always good. And that no other influence, no other translation is real. Therefore, every other translation is unreal, nothing, powerless, and so falls back into its own nothingness. Let me show you here at this example, something in a general way about method and seeing the necessity of looking at things in matrix-wise. When it comes to the fifth chapter, it is a power chapter. Or I would say, if we come to the Christ chapters, we come to the power chapters. Because Christ is the power, the power of truth, healing through the one mind. It's showing the power of manifestation of God in the human. And so we can ask ourselves, but how did Mrs. Eddy deal with the question of power before? Weren't the other chapter also power chapters? And we are quite surprised if we ask this question to find that the first four chapters were not at all power chapters. You know what I mean if I say power chapters. I have my language of my own. I think Webster will be very glad to know me one day. You see, that's something which is typical for system thinking, that in system thinking we never get a real final definition of anything. Here you see the absolute difference between the old way of science and the new way of science. In the old way of science, you always define your term first. And when you have defined your terms, you have to stick to that definition right through the book. That's how we had to write our thesis at the university. You had to define your term, that you stick to those terms. You couldn't change your definitions. They didn't mind how you defined your terms, as long as you defined them clear enough and say, this is what I mean under this and this term. System thinking does the very opposite. It never defines a term definitely and finally. System thinking cannot do that, because system thinking goes out from the whole and not from a part. Any term is a part of the whole, and therefore the definition of any term as a part of the whole would limit that term and take it out of the whole. Therefore, that's what Mrs. Eddy did with her textbook. She never gave for any important term a clear-cut final definition. Never. And that's the progressive way of presenting any part as a part of a whole, because then what we have to do, and what she actually does, and this is the thrilling thing about the textbook when we investigate it further, is that she evolves every term as she goes along from chapter to chapter. In every further chapter, she defines and describes and circumscribes a term in a other way than before, without repeating, that's true, but every time differently. And so we get no more a definition, but an evolving concept of any term. An evolving concept that evolves so that finally it reflects the whole. And we are going to see that more and more. Just take it here with power. You see, in the first chapter, in the chapter on prayer, when she uses power, she doesn't say God is all power. She doesn't say that God alone is power or something like that. She doesn't. She doesn't give an absolute sense of power. She gives a sense, yes, power, and all that is directed towards the purposes of good, and God has power, but she doesn't say that that is the only power. Or you go to the second chapter on Atonement and Eucharist, and you ask yourself, how does she use power there? And there you find that she says, oh yes, you know, God has power over sin, sickness, and death. But she doesn't say that God is the only power. It's a power over. And if it's a power over, it means that that other side has power, or you can't have power over. Still accepting that there are two powers. But saying, actually, all right, yes, God has more power than sin, sickness, and death. So it has a bigger power than the other power. Still leaving the student, the reader, in the meaning, in the opinion, that there are other powers than God. Or she goes to the third chapter on marriage, and there again she uses here and there the term power, and just says that because we cannot demonstrate the power of healing, that does not negate and does not do away really with true Christianity, meaning we lack power. Power is not everything. Power of God is not everything. Or she goes even to the fourth chapter, and in the fourth chapter she really says, well, you know, there are forces and powers going on that belong to mortal mind. Mortal mind has the power to move your hand. Doesn't it have? It has power to move my hand, mortal mind, my thinking. It has, just in the various phenomena of spiritualism, the power of move a table or a chair just by spiritualistic means. There are powers besides God. She doesn't say for 100 pages, she doesn't say that God is the only power. Isn't it terrific? And only when she comes to the fifth chapter, then only she says, you know, God is actually the only power. And there is no other real power. Animal magnetism, she says, has no real power. Now, can you see why the logical thinkers who read the textbook must find that the textbook is very, very absurd and very, very contradictory. Very contradictory. Why do they find that? Because they are still thinking in the old scientific way, in the machine age thinker and logic. And at the end of this week, I want to show you the new logic, and then you see even better where the Christian Science textbook diverges completely from the old logic that is used in the classical sciences. So here you have a wonderful example, and we can take any other example, and there are many wonderful ones, that show that from chapter to chapter, she evolves the main concepts, never defining, never making finite. Defining is somehow making a finite statement and there is nothing to be said anymore about it. She never defines, because defining would be a representative of the old way of thinking. Whereas the new, the system, the synthesis, thinking, must always give a different aspect on a subject. And only in that way we begin to see that each part is a part of the whole. In the old way, each part is an indivisible part, finished. In the new way, a part is always indivisible with the whole, and therefore must reflect all aspects of the whole. Well, to me, this is enormously exciting. Enormously excited. Actually, perhaps I react a bit different than perhaps other people to it, because I always was interested in the scientific nature of Christian Science and in the scientificalness of the science of Christian Science. And coming from the old school of science, of university sciences, naturally this is a thrill to me to see that Mrs. Eddy was 100 years in advance of her age, and that what she is showing still today is far in advance to the general consciousness of the world, that she is showing something that perhaps the next few generations will appreciate only clearly and in its right place. Yes, all right.